Hey, y'all. My name's Luke Stapleton, and I'm here with Adam Spiegelman, and we're going to watch Samurai Cop for Proudly Resents. You guys are going to love it. Enjoy. Peace.
My name is Eric Danger Ninehouse from Sirius XM, Jamie Foxx's Foxhole. We have Proudly Resents from Adam Spiegelman, my buddy from Montclair, New Jersey. We're all transplants here in California for the past 100-something years. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Spiegelman.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for having us at your house. Russell Steinberg is here. He's dying to say something.
I would just like to clear the air and say I am not from New Jersey.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry.
No, we don't want you.
I'm from Westchester County. Much better.
Okay.
Much different.
You don't have to pay a toll when you call. So let's talk about...
Speaking of samurai stories, this
samurai
is a perfect segue.
So we watched... The assignment this week was to watch Samurai Cop, which from 1989, Luke actually was nice enough to invite me over his house one night to watch that and another terrible movie. But this is a classic. Samurai Cop. If you turn this off right now and run out and get it, I think it's worth it.
Maybe wait till after.
It's funny because
Wait till after. Listen, we put a lot of work into this.
We put a lot of work into this.
I have to sit through the movie, so at least.
Like somebody. So listen, 1989, it's cop buddy film, kind of like Cobra meets Lethal Weapon.
Wow.
It stars this huge white guy who...
Beverly Hills Cop, the music.
Yeah, it's a ripoff on every 80s. And like a lot of bad movies we talk about on the show, it was written by somebody whose English was not the first language, so...
I believe he was in Israel.
The dialogue.
Israeli.
We made a cop movie.
It's totally written by someone who doesn't speak English, spoke by people who speak English.
You shoot everyone. It's great. Don't worry about the dialogue. Give him hair, like Mel Gibson hair.
So that's a great thing. So the lead guy is, he's just a huge guy with long hair, and then they have a black sidekick who's kind of like the Danny Glover. But let's talk about his hair. Immediately we learned something about the lead guy's hair. Russell, first time you see our lead cop, Joe.
He's wearing a wig.
So this is the way I envisioned this happening. What happened was, I think they had to do pickups.
Definitely.
After they had done the film, and he had to cut his hair.
Like, he had long hair like Fabio.
Beautiful locks. For the first scene. Obviously, he'd grown it out for the script, maybe? I'm not sure.
No, it would have taken years.
It was taking forever. But
I think he cut it. He got another part after Samurai.
Someone was like, actually, we got to do pickups. Let's do this again.
But it's not two pickups, right?
Half the movie
is in a wig.
We got to reshoot half the movie.
within the same scene.
Yeah, within scenes. It's not like they had to do new scenes. It's like, we want a shot during the shootout of you peeking out behind the tree and shooting him.
Yeah, in a shootout.
In a wig.
Yeah.
Because he don't have the hair anymore. And his wig has a center part, and his real hair had a side flop. It's clear the budget went out. So in the beginning of the movie, like during the shooting scenes, there would be a squib, or at least they'd spray some ketchup on him. And then towards the end, the guy would just grab his chest.
Russell, you were saying about his wig.
Perfect.
Looks like, you had said before, like an orangutan wig.
Oh, yeah. It did. It made him look like a human orangutan. It went from Lethal Weapon to like Lancelot Link. It was as if when you put a hat on an orangutan and, you know.
So it was a woman's wig, right, from Halloween,
Halloween toy and costume.
And it was quite beautiful. And the fact that it kept popping up in every other scene was just epic.
But like every other shot, right? Like every other.
Robert Zidar is a bad movie genius. This man has been in 80 movies. I looked it up and I looked at the list and... This man, I need to go through his whole catalog. It's quite fascinating. Get on IMDb.
Well, he did the Maniac Cop films. He did three of them. He did one. He did another one called Maniac Cop 2. And the third one was called Maniac Cop 3.
Maniac Cop 3. Yeah, so, really hard.
He was also in Tango and Cash.
Everyone of you out there recognize this guy. He has that massive jaw. He was Sylvester Stallone's bodyguard in the 80s and wanted to be in a movie. Whatever. Stallone got him a bit, and all of a sudden this guy's an actor. He's been in 80 movies, and he's been in 80 magnificently bad films. I mean, even Tango and Cash was
a bad film.
A bad film. It was fun.
But while you're watching, like, is this a good movie or a bad movie? And then Robert Zidar shows up like three quarters in, and you're like, done.
Bad film.
Bad film.
Like, they almost put it in to let the audience know what was going, that they know what's going on.
Obviously, Robert Zadar blew someone. I don't know. He did something right, because he's been in a lot of good films. And I love him. And he's still working today. I recommend you at least IMDb be this guy. He's pretty fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
So in this film, he plays the bad guy.
He plays the bad guy. Obviously, our samurai is white. And our
both samurais.
Yeah, both samurais. We have two samurais in the movie. Yeah.
And all the Asian characters are, you know, gangster bosses and whatnot, but they don't have too much speaking roles.
They're all dubbed.
Yeah.
Even though the movie's in English, because the main gangster boss, who looks like Scotty Wynn, the poker player, he's
a magnificent mullet.
He has an amazing mullet, and he's dubbed, you know, the entire movie. And the amazing thing about this movie, the dialogue is all exposition. It's all like, here comes the boss.
As the boss walks down the stairs. Or there was a shootout. At the end of the shootout, what did they say?
He's dead. We got the son of a bitch.
Shootout's over. They literally said, we're
shootout's
done.
Shootout's over. We're done. Next scene.
During the shootout, when they're having a car chase, this movie also starts out with a car chase with our samurai cop, the white guy, and his black partner. The white guy is driving, sometimes with a wig, sometimes without a wig. The same shootout. And he yells out, shoot, for his partner to shoot the gun. And he just goes, shoot. And another time, the partner's yelling, drive faster.
It's like, amazing.
Great. And the bad guys are shooting out of a van from the back, and they're yelling, oh, my God, we got to get this guy. We got to shoot him. And they're saying, you shoot him next.
And it's in this, and they're chasing this horrible van, and the chase scene speeds up for a second. You know how they do that super fast film?
Oh, yeah, they speed up the film.
They speed the film up.
Like, just a couple times, just twice. It's not like they do the whole movie or, you know, the whole chase in it, because some of the chase is actually a chase scene, and then all of a sudden they're like, oh, wait, this is not a chase. We need to actually speed this up.
I have a theory about that as well. When they ran out of money and they couldn't do the big chase scenes anymore, they started doing just riding around the neighborhood, like, and then just speed up the film. They were right here.
They were right here over at the 405, on the one shot. It was right over. It's hilarious where we're at. They're right here, not too far, you know, 10 miles away.
Okay.
10 miles away near the 405, and it was an amazing shot. You're like, oh, my God, I know where that's at. Love that. And, well, we'll talk about Griffith Park in a minute, because half the film's shot in Griffith Park, as is all bad movies.
Wow.
I do want to talk about one bad line, because we're talking about bad dialogue. The black cop just got a car shot up, and he goes, oh, God, the captain's really going to burn my ass. And the white guy looks at me, yeah, you're black ass.
Oh, but there's a lot of reference to his black. Ass is black. There's about three callbacks to that joke about his black
and
ass.
And it never works. Like, none of the lines work.
Yeah.
The black guy's supposed to be the comic relief, and he never has a funny line.
Right.
Yeah. But he laughs. That's how he sells it. He laughs with the whole line. The white cop jumps over a fence, and the black cop climbs under the fence. And goes, why didn't you go over the fence? And he goes, I'm undercover, man.
Yeah.
Makes zero sense. Yeah. Absolutely. Actually, that
made You know what made the least sense? When the black guy was towel drying his hair when he came out of the shower.
The first time in history.
Yeah, I don't think black people towel that. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. If anyone out there is African American, I mean, I'm pretty sure the hair, that's a white guy thing. I think the director was just like, towel dry your hair.
And he's like,
after he did it, his hair was all screwed up. Like, it was all.
Yeah, it looked worse than it did before.
The black guy, actually, we all know YouTube. We all love it. YouTube, this gem of a film, and you will find cutouts of his facial expressions, because that's the best part of the movie.
Oh,
for the black guy is his facial expressions to responding to the samurai cop's awesome dialogue, particularly with the nurse scene,
which we have on tape.
Can we
you want to fuck me?
So first car chase, the van hits a log, then explodes for some reason because it hits a log.
No, it like butts up against a rock.
Very slowly.
It explodes, and then the guy comes running out, and they do the guy on fire.
He's like on fire.
70s stuntman on fire.
So he goes down, and then they explain. They say, put him out. And then he's put the blanket on him. You put the blanket on him. The fire is out. Like, we're watching this movie. So that guy's in the hospital, and he's their witness, and they need to talk to him.
Okay.
And
This is the scene.
And then they ask the nurse how he's doing, and then she hits on Samurai Cop for no real reason.
Yeah. Okay.
And then she shoots him down.
Yeah.
She hits on him. She starts the hit on, and then she's like, you're not big enough for me.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. Great job setting up that scene, by the way. I like that. I like it. It was very professional.
I don't buy it.
No, I mean it.
Hello.
Hi.
How is he? Do you think he'd be able to answer a few questions?
No way. His lips are burned. So what, he'll never be able to talk again?
Oh, he'll talk again, but you just have to give him a couple of weeks. Next time, guys, catch him in one piece.
Thanks, nurse.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Would you like to go out with me?
Yes, I would.
Would you like to fuck me?
Bingo.
Well, then let's see what you've got. Doesn't interest me. Nothing there.
Nothing there? Just exactly what would interest you? Something the size of a jumbo jet?
Have you been circumcised?
Yeah, I have. Why?
Well, your doctor must have cut a big portion of it off.
No, he was a good doctor.
Good doctors make mistakes, too. That's why they buy insurance.
Hey, don't worry. I got enough. It's big.
I want bigger.
Hey, I have, Have you been circumcised?
Shut up.
Does it?
The on-screen chemistry, by the way.
That is... They're obviously reading off cue cards.
Something.
And the pauses in between, I mean, we could reread each line after they say it.
Well, they think they're going to cut to the reactions of the black cop,
right.
His face, but his face is so bad and just ridiculous that, and he's just making random reactions, and they just cut him in, they throw him in like a salad, just randomly tossing it in there.
Just for no reason.
For no reason.
In that very scene, though, there's two scenes where you actually see the marks for the actors to walk up to.
Are you serious?
On the floor. You see the little white X?
Yeah.
That's how awesome this movie is.
So there's a cop who's watching this witness in the hospital. So they go up to him.
Oh, he's
great. He looks like a guy they just met at a gym. He's this built guy.
Right.
Terrible actor. He stands up and he gives his lines like, oh, okay. Really bad. But they still pull the camera away so you can see the whole hallway, including the floor, including the mark. There's a black tee.
Carpeted floor.
Right. The carpeted floor with the black tee.
The hospital carpet? The cop.
So the very next scene after this is where the head decapitation comes off. We were talking about the... So if you ever do go out and buy this, which I strongly recommend, you'll get a good price for it, $5.99, something like that. You'll see that... What do you call it? The picture on the front is a guy holding a head. There's no decapitation in this movie except for by the bad guy decapitating the person the guy who got burned.
The witness.
Yeah. And his head is wrapped in gauze, so it's very easy to fake.
So the head, there's
could have been a pineapple.
There's no
reference. No, it was a styrofoam wig hat.
It was.
It was so light. They pick it up and it's like, practically threw it. It floated. It was a helium balloon.
A tiny little head.
Wow.
It was pretty great. The head cops leave and they say to the cop watching the door, don't let anyone in but doctors and nurses.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, okay. 2 minutes later, who walks in?
A porn star.
Literally a gorgeous woman. We've already seen her tits in the movie. She walks in. She's dragging
a giant bin.
With a garbage can.
In the bin. Exactly. A giant, like one of those, big, like that laundry bins with a standing erect garbage can.
Red flag number one, it's a nurse pushing.
Porn star nurse.
Yeah, porn star nurse pushing a janitor's.
Yeah, I thought he knew she was a janitor. She says, I'm going to clean up the room, take out the garbage. Do you mind? And he's like, no, I don't mind.
Like the nurse from the variety show nurse sketch walks in with the giant red cross.
Enter!
Wow.
And then pointing and poking and pushing.
Once they get in, the bad guy, our boy, Zadar, pops out of the trash bin and cuts this guy's head off.
The movie's shot on video. It looks like it was made in 1960.
Looks like it was made.
No, not even 60 because it would look good. It looks like it made when the video cam was invented in 80.
It was made with that 1980s your dad had.
Yeah, you have the pack that you put over your shoulder and giant video camera.
And it's yellow. The whole film is yellow. So Robert Zadar is a huge guy and he's somehow crammed in this tiny little bin.
Well, that's the thing. When they get in the room, the bin is pushed off to the side and he's in a giant with a towel over him. It's a totally different set. Yeah. No continuity.
Yeah, she goes, get out. And he chubs up. And
of course, she announces what he's about to do. Get out.
Cut his head off. And then he holds the head. She says, you done with the head? And they put it away.
How's his acting in it?
Zadar? The best.
He's the best in the movie.
In the whole movie.
He was, right?
He's got such a huge face.
Actually, I would like to disagree with that.
Okay.
The captain. I don't know who the captain is.
Oh, he was
actually kind of funny. He had a couple lines. Let's see. I think I wrote one down.
Well, Luke looks. He's the screaming captain who yells at the two partners all the time.
Obviously, okay. The captain's got to scream all the time.
Well, yeah, any of those movies.
But his one comic relief was, oh, my ass hurts so bad. I feel like somebody crawled up there and died. Like, what?
Captain, you can't say that. Turns out that actor works in films, and he's like a crew guy who's done tons of movies, and they put him in there. And he's pretty amazing. There is a scene where they find out there's the head bad guy, which is why Samurai Cop's in L.A. to save the day, and they go confront him at a restaurant. At the end of the scene, Robert Zadar gets all his henchmen to beat him up.
Well, all right. Let's back up 1 second.
Yeah.
So it's the greatest fight scene ever, the way it's set up, because, okay, they argue with the lawyer, and they are, you know, the cops are really being tough, and they
basically get out of this town.
Yeah, get out of it. They tell the gangsters in public, get out of this town or else. And the lawyer's like, you're screwed. And then, you know, they fuck off, right? You get one bad look from the gangster to look at Zadar, go take care of this. And then it cuts to Zadar standing in a doorway, calling over one guy. He sends him over. They beat him up. He calls over another guy. Sends him over.
Oh, one at a time, man.
He sends over his gangsters one at a time to beat these guys up, these two cops. And they keep getting beat up. And all of a sudden, he's like, oh, I'm done with this. So he jumps down off the door, off the step he's in. He grabs an Uzi, I think from the bushes or from one of the guys.
Yeah, it was a bush Uzi.
No clue where he gets this freaking Uzi, and he just shoots all of his guys.
He kills all his guys.
It's hysterical.
Oh, and they keep cutting to the same shot of the car getting shot up over and over.
So, yeah, they keep, and the same henchman they use later on, they have this large black guy.
He's unmistakable because he looked like Mel Carter.
Huge.
And his hair is straightened and pulled back in this fight scene. At the end of the movie, he returns and his hair is like an afro.
But I can recognize his breasts.
Yeah.
He had beautiful breasts.
So, well, here's a scene we have another clip from. Stolen from Beverly Hills Cop. You guys remember Bronson Pinchot was like the big standout in Beverly Hills Cop playing the gay, effeminate, crazy, over-the-top galley owner.
The galley owner. Right,
yeah, so in this movie, after he...
Also, the Wayans, Damon Wayans was like, go ahead, take these bananas.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like the Damon Wayans type thing. Yeah. So they have their own version of this. After they tell the bad guys to beat it, the cops are leaving. And on the way out, Samurai Cop, by the way, huge puss hound. Sorry to say.
Oh, yeah.
Loves the ladies. He can't stop hitting on women. So on his way out, he asks the waiter. On his way out, they have to hit up a waiter and ask him about the hot woman who's at the table.
Yeah.
You can hear the waiter and how we have it. But also, just so you know, when you watch the movie, you don't see the waiter for about 2 minutes into the scene. So you don't know who's talking. Right, they have shots of the whole restaurant and the other people, but you don't know where the voice is coming from. I assume because he was so bad, they couldn't show him.
Yeah.
Wait.
So it's
how?
It's all
how in that quagmire of horrible acting, at no continuity, bad costume? Did they decide that this one Filipino guy was the weak link?
Right. They're like, oh, that guy's got to go.
Like, oh, cut away from that guy.
So here's the comic relief, the stereotypical, over the top,
gay Filipino.
Samurai Cop.
Who's that blonde girl?
Oh, her name is Jennifer. She's the boss.
The boss? You mean she owns this place?
Her mother owns the place.
Where's her father?
Bang!
Killed? Who shot him?
He.
Who?
Him.
Who's him?
Himself.
Oh, he committed suicide.
Yes!
Listen. When you see Jennifer alone, tell her I think she's very lovely.
I'll do that.
Tell her I'll try to see her soon.
Good. I'll help you.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I like cops. My cousin's a cop.
Oh, really? Where?
In Costa Rica.
Oh. Good. What's your name?
Alfonso Rafael Federico Sebastian. This is my first name.
What's your last name?
Oh,
that's all right. We just need your first name. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Bye-bye. I'll tell my cousin I know you.
I like the jazz in the background.
Oh, yeah. That helps the scene.
How good was that?
Oh, first of all the queens are standing up and clapping because it was pretty brilliant. But, yeah, that's the... It couldn't have made it more over the top.
Hello. Bing bong. Church bells are ringing.
But they seem like the wig, if we can go back real quick, was like on set.
Oh, she's the boss.
So yeah, and it doesn't make any sense anything he says. She's the boss, yet her mom owns the place. His dad, I don't know why we need to know the dad killed himself.
I don't think we ever see her again, do we?
Who, the girl?
Yeah,
that's their love interest.
Oh, someone just asked if that was Jar Jar Biggs playing that.
It was a little less offensive than Jar Jar Biggs.
He kind of does look Filipino, but he's from Costa Rica.
Is Jar Jar Biggs Filipino? I thought he was black.
He's black. So yeah, they steal a lot of these things right from the movie Cobra, which is pretty fantastic. And have you ever seen that? Oh, here's a scene. He falls in love with Jennifer. Now, our man, Samurai Cop, who in the beginning of the movie sleeps with another Peggy, the very horny policewoman in the helicopter.
The helicopter pilot, yeah.
Who just constantly says she wants to sleep with everybody.
Yeah.
He hits on Jennifer.
She actually might be the best actress in the movie.
She is really good.
Very talented.
Very talented.
Who do you think had better tits, Jennifer or
Peggy or Jennifer?
Peggy.
Really? I thought Jennifer.
Peggy's sticking out in my mind because I see her in the uniform.
Yeah.
Uniform does do it. Yeah. Woman and cop, dude, I'm done.
The uniform sells it.
What? All right, sorry. Go back, Spiegs. You were in the middle of making a point.
No, we were just talking about him trying to hit on Jennifer. He goes to her office to hit on Jennifer, runs this restaurant, because all he can think about, even though he's supposed to bring down this drug cartel, we're not really sure what they do everything bad, these people. It's just the decoration. There's a huge macrame lion on her wall. That's and right. Every shot has to have this lion in it. Either she's walking closer to the lion or the camera is going towards the lion. And you think, is there a microphone in the lion?
Yeah.
Is the lion going to start to talk? Is it going to wink at us? What's going to happen? Is in the next scene? Is there a shootout?
Actually, there's the scene, one of the end scenes where they're in the mob boss's house. I'm positive the microphone was in that tree. Because all of a sudden, all the dialogue has to happen around that tree. You remember? And that's in the middle of the house.
The lion was mic'd.
That's a really good point. I didn't think of that. Because I know for a fact they didn't have the mics on those guys. And they were totally having the dialogue right next to the tree. And you're like, that is so random. He walked away and then he came back. Like, he's the boss. He doesn't have to fucking walk back to this to talk to this peon. Why is he walking back to talk to this peon?
And they fired the boom operator because he kept getting the boom in the shot. And they're like, we're just going to hide the mic.
No one will notice.
Do we see a boom in one of these shots? I feel like in one of the shots we do see a boom. I remember pausing it because we pause it several times. You will pause this movie. I guarantee it. And you will rewind.
We didn't rewind today, but rewinding this film is definitely recommended. There are a lot of weird scenes. There's a scene where the head boss tells Robert Zadar that he wants the head of one of his henchmen on his piano, and he points to this white grand piano he has.
No, it was upright.
Upright. He goes, I want his head, and I want it on this piano. And Robert Zadar says, I will bring you the head for your piano.
I will bring you the head. And I will place it on your piano.
Now I will
start my car.
They even say when the bad guy walks down the stairs, one of the henchmen says, here comes the boss. We know you're the boss, and we know he's coming down because we can see it happening as we speak. And Samurai Cop, even though he should be stopping this drug cartel, is hitting on this woman, Jennifer. Yeah. And he goes, of course, everyone has these American names. He's Joe, she's Jennifer, Peggy, you know, all American names. She says, I'm going to church on Sunday. So he shows up at church in a suit, and he's going to take her to his house because it's his birthday. One of the henchmen is following them, like blatantly. So much so that I thought that Samurai Cop had the guy drive him around because he was right in front of him in this big car.
I totally don't remember that scene.
There's one of the henchmen in this huge like Lincoln Continental, and he's standing right there. And at one point, I thought he rented the car and got a driver because he was so close to them. So he gets on the phone and tells him that they're going back to his house. So we know that they know they're going to his house. He could just follow them to his house.
Yeah.
But instead, they go to every cop's house, every cop on the force, and they beat him up until they torture him until.
Sorry.
They go after the other cops in the force.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly like Lethal Weapon 2.
But they don't.
Which is a good film.
Before he takes the Neutra house down.
But they go to every cop's house, and it's like they're cop. First of all, you have a henchman following him home, so he knows how to get there. Yeah. And also, these are cops. Like.
Yeah,
it's an easy. If you want to be a bad guy and not get caught by cops, yes, killing them all would make sense. But no one does that.
Yeah.
So it's just weird. They try to torture
Peggy.
They torture
Peggy. Hot oil on Peggy's tits. I couldn't believe it.
No, they ruin it. They ruin everything. Yeah. And then when they go to another this random cop in his house, he's there, and they kill his wife. And then they stab him. They kill his wife. They slit his throat. Then they go to the black guy's house. He kills the henchman. And he keeps. Here's another thing. Black guy knows that they're going to Samurai Cop's house. So what does he do? he calls Samurai Cop at home. I mean, obviously, there's no cell phones.
Yeah.
Repeatedly, he doesn't call the police and send them to his house. He doesn't go to his house himself. He just keeps phoning him until he answers it eight scenes later. Meanwhile, they beat up Peggy. They've poured stuff on Peggy.
Yeah.
This whole time, while all these
and
cops are getting tortured.
No, but no, because they were trying to get his address. I guess the henchmen didn't. They wanted his. They were trying to elicit his address from everybody.
Well, how does the black guy trick them? Do you remember what happened?
Oh, he says, like, I have his address. It's over there in the closet.
Which is so like, random.
You know, it's hanging in my closet, his address.
Yeah, so like one of the henchmen, the guy with the gun, walks over to the closet
and
to look for the address.
He starts rifling and rummaging through
coats.
I can't find this damn thing. Where is that stupid address?
In the closet. Not on the table, not in my book, but in the closet.
It's in the closet. Like a bowling ball. Is this it?
Is that the address? There's an old boot. Is that the address?
Check in the boots.
Check the boots. And then the guy is so befuddled and fooled long enough, because everything's very slow, happens very slow in this film, that it takes the cop 17 minutes to feel like he's ready to punch the guy out and save the day.
I guess I don't want to skip to the fight scene, but
let's skip to the fight scene.
The last sword fight scene is so amazing because they're both so uncoordinated, and this is also another scene where you can see their marks, and they start from like 20 yards away.
But they're in Griffin Park.
Again, we're in Griffin Park. We do a chase scene in Griffin Park. We do a foot chase scene, a car chase scene in Griffin Park. And then we do this end fight scene.
Between Robin Zadar, maniac cop, who is a samurai bad guy, and our samurai cop.
I feel like they stole a lot of locations.
Yeah.
Oh, they just drove up on people's lawns.
Totally. Mm-hmm. They did not pay for much in this movie. Mm-hmm.
They do weird reaction shots. Like, they just shoot them randomly, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, the black guy, again, is here. You know, our second cop is here at the fight scene, and he's in the back, and we get to see his facial reactions again.
Now, those could be also, you know, he doesn't have a wig, so we don't know, but those could also be pickups.
No, they are.
Yeah.
Within that last fight scene.
They're always in a weird spot.
You're kidding me.
No, they're both regular scenes and wig scenes in the same samurai fight. So they realize we did a samurai fight, and we don't have shots of him grabbing the other guys, like key scenes,
poking the eyes out. He had his
wig on. Yeah, it's just funny to see what scenes they've missed, which seem like major scenes.
The classic, like, spin the sword around and get the guy's sword away from him. You know, where you spin the sword and then flick it away.
They had to go
back and get that with the wig on.
I don't know who directed this, but I hope they never directed it again.
Amir, something.
Oh, really?
He's directed a couple.
Israeli. He wrote directed it. Samurai.
Couple comparable films.
But we start from a wide shot of this fight scene as these guys approach each other, and you know what's supposed to be some sort of tiger form. You know, one's poised to attack, one's poised to parry, whatever. And it's so slow developing. They're walking slowly to each other, and you're like, okay, what's going on? Is this some sort of samurai
ritual?
Yeah, ritual. And then all of a sudden,
samurai ritual.
Zadar starts swinging his sword like a bat, like a baseball bat.
Yeah, he has no skill whatsoever. Yeah. The Samurai Cop does something that looks like it's real.
No, he does Conan the Barbarian.
He does Conan the Barbarian.
He does the flip up of the sword like Conan does, and he does this thing, and you're like,
cut to Zadar, and he just like goes,
like Mickey Mantle.
He was like a 5-year-old kid who gets really angry. He's got too much sugar, and he starts swinging the sword around like, I'm going to get you, I'm going to get you.
Zadar was special in this scene, and we do see the crazy shots of him swinging like a bat, blah blah blah. They fight for like 10 minutes. You get the reaction of his guy, and then the death scene, right? We get to kill him, right?
After he's killed everybody in existence, the other guy's like, "No, don't do it.
We can't kill this guy.
You're a cop."
But he could kill him because he's holding a samurai sword.
Yeah.
Like you can kill Robert Zadar down on the ground. He lost the fight. All he has to do is kill Samurai Cop. All he has to do is kill Robert Zadar.
Yeah,
and his partner tells him not to because he's a cop.
Yeah,
and his partner's like, it'll save him face. And no. And then Zadar pulls out a little samurai knife and kills himself.
Harry Carey.
Yeah, and he lets him do it.
Yeah, he's about to interfere. He's like, no.
Let him die with
it's
face.
Okay. Yeah. This is how we do it.
This is how it's a samurai way. It's the white samurai way.
Yeah. This is white people. You don't understand. Yeah. This is how we do it. We stab ourselves.
There really is no like samurai exposition. There's exposition about everything else.
There's
very little exposition about how he's became a samurai.
There was zero on that.
Considering the name of the movie is Samurai Cop, you never.
And that he is a samurai cop.
There's no Steven Seagal montage of him in Japan.
There should have been an 80s montage. But that's what they meant.
Also, there's no samurai fighting except for that last bit of bullshit we just talked about. The whole time, he's just like bare knuckle punching people in the head and like shooting
the
them.
The two-fisted behind the neck punch, you know? Yeah. Star Trek punch.
He's kind of like Clint Eastwood any which way you can.
We had the neck break in there in one of them.
Yeah. He does a neck break, but the guy keeps talking. Yeah. He stays alive. He just goes down. You don't go down from that move. That's
you're done.
No, he was helping his back with a chiropractic move. Yeah. He's like,
he has his
so
hand
good.
Around his neck and he does the
and you hear the
and then he lays down and he's like, ugh. Like, I lose the fight now, but I'm still crawling around. I still have all my faculties.
Yeah.
But somehow I've lost because you mimicked the neck break.
All the tension was in my back and now I'm fine. Thank you so much.
I really needed that. It was a good stretch. Yeah.
It was also real quick, I think we should wrap it up, but there's a big shootout that takes about 20 minutes. And I think the movie's great, and I think at one point, and it's weird to say this, but I think it loses its way. I mean, we're talking about a terrible film to begin with, but it's so many great mess-ups and scenes and things that are going to make you laugh. And then there's just a ridiculous shootout where they just cut
from any angle.
They just randomly put together one guy shooting, another guy shooting, another guy shooting, another guy
this
shooting.
Guy's,
is this the scene in the bad guy's house?
Yeah, it starts in the bad guy's apartment.
But it's outside, too, and one guy's by a lake.
We get to fall into the pool. Oh, and he falls. And that's where there's no blood.
The whole last thing they ran out of money.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. The big shootout finale, they ran out of blood.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of kids playing shootout.
Yeah.
You know, with fingers. Any scene you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
I really do, for you listeners out there. The dialogue alone, you will have Facebook status updates taken care of for 3 or 4 weeks. Right. Every day, just use a different line from this movie, and your friends will think you're genius. Like, where are you coming up with this stuff? You're a genius.
Russell, pro con this film? Should people go out and get this?
Should you go out and get it? I think it's worth, with the intention of having this kind of evening, you know?
Yeah.
Like, invite some friends over. I don't take pot. But if you take pot, maybe you can take pot and watch this.
Hey, hold on. I'm kind of curious of what level of bad movies you guys are used to. Because I really love bad movies. I came to this town and people always ask me, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I kind of want to make the most epically bad movie ever.
Wow.
And I'm talking Piranha, like this kind of film, Tiptoes. I want to make something that people look back and they're like, man, this guy really fucking tanked.
But now, Luke, you have an interesting job. Let's talk about what you do.
Oh, yeah. What do I do?
What's the name of the company that you work for?
I work for Machinima. It's the largest gaming community in the world, kind of.
Machinima.
It's machine and cinema put together.
It sounds like Meshuggah.
It does.
That's what Russell works for, Machinima.
Have y'all ever heard of Red vs. Blue? Machinima is an art form.
You're over the age of 25.
Like Crips and
Machinima is an art form of telling.
Bloods and Crips?
Machinima is the art form of telling short stories in the gaming universe.
Using
video game graphics and retelling short stories and whatnot. And it's got quite a following.
Like when they make songs, but with like the people from World of Warcraft?
There you go. That's Machinima. And what do I do for them? I tell people, I joke with people, I'm like, I watch YouTube and Vimeo all day, and then I get those videos and put them up on our channel. So we have 4 YouTube channels. What do I do all day? I watch YouTube, and I play around with Facebook.
How do you find some of these videos that you put up?
People send them to me. I have to troll. I troll a lot. VodPod is a great website for that. Vimeo is good for that. People send me a lot of stuff. I mean, if kids were out there trying to find my email address, I get Facebook requests.
What is your email that people...
No. I get too many emails already because it's gotten out there once.
Yeah.
And I got 100 emails the next day.
Of anything good?
We had to change it. No. Not. I don't think we found anything from that. But literally, because there's so many... We're getting 30 million uniques a month right now.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. People are just all over our site. Go to YouTube. Second largest YouTube channel in the world. We've got 2 billion hits, I think, right now. That's just on our main channel.
And how many... Metro Radio Live has about the same thing, right? 2 billion, just under?
No, 2 billion. No, right now we've got 1.2 million.
That's amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. Wow. Yeah. I went to a YouTube meeting with a gathering of all the YouTube celebrity.
They chocolate all... Rain.
I was just about to say, oh, yeah, the Chocolate Rain guy.
He was there.
So bizarre. You were
He was there.
He read my mind.
He was there. Let's see here. You know, Shay Tart, all these people are in there.
Right.
And,
he asked the ninja.
They didn't know that we were there. And right. I
asked a ninja?
My first, so the first day, I didn't put my name on the... I didn't what channel I was with on my name tag. And the second day, I did. And literally, people were coming up to me. Who are you? What's going on with your channel? You're the silent killer. We all talk about you.
I'm like, whoa. Silent killer.
Well, you know, here's our metrics. Here's a little picture of our metrics. Okay. We just hit our second.
Wow, 1,402,033,813.
That's just on our main channel.
How do you make? How do they make money?
YouTube.
Do they charge?
Well, what we do.
Does that Google ad thing really work?
It totally works.
Okay.
It doesn't work great. So Google, YouTube. I can't really talk about a lot of this, but YouTube is.
Is there like good residuals from these little pop up ads or no? It's not worth doing.
The problem is no. It's worth doing. If you're able to two things.
Right.
It's worth doing if you're able to target your audience and know what your audience is.
Right.
And what I mean by that is we know our audience is 13 to 28 year old gamers.
Okay, gamers.
Gamers.
Gotcha.
Where everybody else, all these other people, they have they have girls, guys, gamers, old, young.
Right.
There's a lot. By the way, there's a lot of 50, 60-year-old people on YouTube.
Oh, I know.
You'd be shocked.
Oh, I know. With their puppies and their...
But they call it the YouTube.
The YouTube.
The YouTube. That's how you know it's either 20-year-old or 50-year-old.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So if you know your demographic, yes, you can make money. It's not super lucrative for a lot of people, but it's lucrative for, 15 channels or so.
Wow.
We're one of the only channels. We sit on the board.
Okay.
YouTube, when YouTube has a board meeting,
yeah,
our CEO goes.
Wow.
We're a partner.
So who's number one, Dana?
No, number one is actually Vevio is a
conglomerate. Okay. Yeah.
They're the music channel.
Right.
They have 18 billion views.
How's Dana White doing?
They're slightly. Who's Dana White?
The owner of the UFC.
No clue.
Okay. Wow.
UFC is doing well. UFC does really well on YouTube.
Okay.
I've never been recognized for anything in the world.
Right.
We now have Mission Matters T-shirts. We're doing them, and I've been wearing them. And people. Kids stop me.
Really?
Where'd you get that shirt? Because we're not selling them yet.
Right.
We're going through the whole phase.
Right.
Like, where'd you get that shirt? How'd you get that? Do you know who worked? Do you know anyone that works there?
Right.
Like, yeah, I work there, and they flip out. It's
wow.
The kids on YouTube are so excited to be.
What is on the Machinima? Not to sound like on the YouTube. Or you sound like an old man.
I mean, we have three different. I'm in charge of user generated content, finding user generated content, and putting it up.
But it's got to be. Machine.
No, not anymore. We're branching out from that. We have live action. Yeah, we have live action
comedy.
Shows.
What about the chicken guy? The guy singing about chicken.
Chicken. Yeah, I love that guy.
What's his name so people can look him up?
Oh man,
I'll look him up now. I think we should play it.
That was months ago. What was funny is you didn't love it. You're like, oh,
no, I loved it. Okay. I just can't put it on television. Chicken guy.
The chicken. Just type in chicken song. I don't know.
Chicken song. This guy is singing.
But it's not gonna be.
I love chicken.
That's the chicken dance.
Yeah,
there he is. That's it. Oh. That's him.
The fried chicken song.
So when I saw this is 900,000. So I see stuff way before everybody else. I saw this at 1,000 views. I started passing around to everybody. I was like, dude, this is going viral. And people were making fun of me. Like, no, this isn't. And now it's at 900,000. This kid is now. He's probably made. Hopefully, he's made $2,000-$3,000 off this.
Oh, from the video. From you guys. From the video.
Not from us. No. This is
just from people clicking on it. If you get so many views, it's
okay. Hopefully, he made
some money.
So should I pay to advertise?
If you want, it's hysterical.
It's very funny.
If you type in "fried chicken song" on YouTube,
it's just because it's a. The other one where Run Tell That. It was a news report about a guy who tried to break into.
Well, that one's gone super viral. That was on USA Today.
Oh my god!
USA, yeah.
This is a news thing, and
I'm sure if you are listening to this, you know this story. Essentially, his sister gets her room gets broken into, and they try to.
Oh yeah, my daughter knows this one.
Yeah.
There's a song now.
And then they made a song out about it.
Yeah.
And then they split the revenue with this guy 50-50. He's moving his family out of the ghetto.
Okay. Are you serious? Oh,
yeah,
for
yeah.
this? They have T-shirts?
They have T-shirts.
Who split the revenue with them?
The guys who made the song, they're a really well-known YouTube channel. They have about 400,000 subs.
There it is. Bad Intruder.
There it is. Bad Intruder song. So this guy was able to move his family out of the ghetto.
Wow, 16 million hits.
That's from this channel alone.
Right.
What happens with YouTube, you got to understand.
There's a million channels.
There's six.
They steal it. So somebody will rip the song, and then they'll put it up on their channel to try to drive views to their channel.
Will they get paid for it?
No. you're only get paid if you're a YouTube partner, and there's only about 16,000.
Well, here's the original. What's got a million? Those are the original.
Well, no, the original. Well, it depends on what you mean by the original.
It's my daughter's favorite song.
So it's a great.
This one here, I think, is the original.
Well, that's the news story.
Right.
So yeah, that's the original.
Right.
And then the song you're watching out, the Schmo Brothers, whatever they're called. What is it? Steve Schmo.
Antoine Dodson.
Well, these guys are hysterical, and they do this type of thing with everybody. And what they do is they go and they contact the person they're making fun of, and they joke and they say, hey, we'll split it 50-50 with you. They did it with this guy, and he was just on USA Today this week, and he's moving his family out of the ghetto because of it.
What kind of money did that Stop Messing With Britney guy do?
Probably. See, again, you have to be a partner. They're making their money. They're making their money off of. You can become a. YouTube has to agree.
Oh, Antoine's shirts.
And they're making their money off of the iTunes.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you know that girl that's up with the governor of New York? She came up with that song on iTunes, and she sold it for like 50 cents.
Yeah.
And she sold like 4 million things of it.
Because people were curious in who she was.
Right.
Yeah. Pretty
and you can't go on for 50 cents, right?
Can't.
Yeah.
Oh, my song, 4 million.
Right. You want to know more about her, and you see you have a song, oh, it's got to be terrible.
Right.
That's 50 cents, and then.
You can't go on for 50 cents.
So she did well.
I mean, what
she
iTunes. Right.
God forbid.
A couple iTunes and YouTube together, and you have something that's completely changing the market for us. It's really fascinating. I really believe that. There's numbers out there that says that new media and circular media, whatever you want to call it, is taking up, by 2012, will be almost 35% of what America consumes.
Really?
That's a huge number. Think about that. What they spend on entertainment.
Right.
That's wild. So these people, you know, regular people, it's kind of a fantastic revolution, but at the same time, it's weird.
Let's wrap this up. Thank you guys for coming. Luke, Russell, Eric, thanks for having us.
No worries, man.
Luke, if anyone wanted to contact you.
Yeah, just look me up on YouTube, machinima.com. Go ahead and email me. I'll answer it.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm machinima.com and Russell Steinberg.
Loretta, do you got a Twitter page or something you want to get people on the...
Nah, give a shit.
All right.
And I'm Eric Danger Nineheist. I host a nightly show on JB Fox's Foxhole 106 on Sirius. And I do the retro radio show here with Marilyn Gigliotti, the beautiful Marilyn Gigliotti from the movie Clerks. Monday through Thursday from 6 to 8 o'clock.
Great. And this is Adam Spiegelman for Proudly Resents, ProudlyResents.com, and Meshuggah.com.
And Machine Gun.
Machine Gun.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you all very much for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I love bad movies. So.
Yep. Thank you for finally coming on.
Samurai Cop.
Samurai Cop.
Check it out. Highly recommend it.
Highly recommend
it. Thanks, guys. All right.